all my rejuvenated players. This is the Dominion League Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Strumpf, and this is a very special interview episode. It's been a while. My guest this episode is longtime league player and moderator, Sharer. He is currently playing his 35th season.
Basically, going back and forth between C and D tiers.
With a three-season excursion to E tier to make the Hall of Fame for best season with a 92 win percentage. He is coming up on a tie 10th place of most consecutive seasons played, and is with 10 total division wins in 5th place of the top 10 most won divisions. He joined the league moderator team in season 43 and is the rules chair, which means, of course, that he is writing all the rules and decides all promotions and demotions and who is league champion and such matters. No one actually knows how to pronounce his username, including himself. Will this mystery finally be solved? Let's find out together. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I am fantastic.
Are you very excited?
I am so excited.
Okay, perfect. We're going to jump right in because knowing you, this is going to take a while.
What?
So, can you share with the world what the meaning of your username is? You don't have to pronounce it if you want to keep that a secret or a mystery. But can you tell us how it came to be?
Yes, I can. So it's the main character in a book called Between Two Rivers, or maybe Between the Rivers, but I think it's Between Two Rivers, by Harry Turtledove, who is an author who writes a lot of alternative history, but this book is not alternative history. Well, maybe it kind of is. I don't know. It's basically set in this civilization that is in the Mediterranean, except the Mediterranean Sea doesn't exist because it's dried up.
Oh.
Yeah. So there, maybe part of it does, but like there's at least a bunch of it is dried up. And I think the two rivers refers to the Tigris and the Euphrates, but then again, those don't like run into the Mediterranean. So maybe that's not true. I read this book when I was in elementary or middle school, so it's a long time ago, and I picked the name because at some point I had to pick a username for something, and I was like, well, that's a name that I can think of. Done. If I had to guess, it was probably for the Europa Universalis forums, which I was on in high school for like the first version of that game, but which I played in like 2002 or something like that, but I'm not confident about that. It could have been for something else.
And you had just read the book? So it was...
Maybe, maybe not. I'm not sure.
But do you remember anything about the book or what this character did? Or the like character why?
Was a merchant. But in the book, there were some like gods that were very much like present in the world and were fighting each other. Like they like gods of different cities. And I that's about it.
Okay. So it's not the protagonist?
No, it is the protagonist.
Okay.
Yeah, he's just a lowly merchant for some reason.
Okay.
And it is only much later that I found out that it's also a word for a sword in some Babylonian or something. There's some mythology where it's a sword, and then it's also a region in Azerbaijan.
Mm. Okay.
Which I have not been to.
So, what is the meaning of your avatar in Discord?
Yes. So, I started to get comments from coworkers back in maybe 2014 or 15 about how I looked like a young Donald Sutherland. You look like Donald Sutherland. It was like, you look like a young Donald Sutherland. So at some point I just decided, all right, that's what I am now. So I changed avatars on like a lot of my social media to be, there was a previous picture of Donald Sutherland looking kind of confused. He didn't have any facial hair, and I have facial hair. So then later I found one where he's at least got a mustache. He doesn't have a beard, but you know, you do what you can. And plus, he looks, rather than looking confused in the current picture, he looks happy and kind of mischievous, which I think is a reasonably good fit for me.
Mm-hmm. So you embraced it.
Yes. Yes. I've even got a softball trophy from a previous job where our team was absolutely dreadfully bad. I don't think we won a game the entire season. And we got trophies made that was said like the best softball team in the world. And mine was like everybody had their name on the trophy, but mine said Donald Sutherland.
Okay. Can you share a little bit about yourself just in general as much or as little as you like?
Sure. It's a dangerous question.
Could lead to a very long 2 minutes.
Okay. So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri in the United States. For those of you who are not familiar with that, it's pretty much in the middle of the country. Somebody got angry at me when I said it was smack dab in the middle, but basically is.
What does that mean?
Like the center. So then I went to school out in California, and then I went to grad school in Texas, and then I got a job in upstate New York, and now I live in Boston. So I've kind of bounced around, but I've been in Boston, Massachusetts since 2017 for work. I am a software developer that I've focused in recent years on Unity, which is like the 3D game development engine that's used for a bunch of different things. But one thing it's used for is augmented reality and virtual reality applications, which is what I've been doing with that. But I've also done a bunch of other stuff with software development. That's probably already been 2 minutes.
I mean, we're not really on a timer.
We're not. Ugh.
I know.
Such deception.
So, of course, these are all interesting facts about you. But the thing that is like obviously the most important for me to know is what is your favorite color?
Blue. No, yellow. Ah! But actually purple. Ah! No, it really is purple.
Okay. So this concludes the general part of this interview.
Okay.
And now we can warm up. Or have the quiz. Which one would you like first?
Warm up, I guess. Seems like a thing that should come early in the process.
No. First, we need to establish who you are, like who we are talking to.
I see.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense. Please don't question the process. Okay. Are you ready?
Sure. Probably.
So you will get 10 questions. With two options each, and you have to say which option you prefer. You can say both, or you can say neither, but don't make it a habit.
Music participants will know that might be a difficult task for me.
We will spend as long as we need on this.
Okay.
All right. Monty Python or Weird Al?
Monty Python.
Pumpkin pie or lasagna?
I guess pumpkin pie.
Squash or ultimate frisbee?
Probably frisbee.
Bees or hippos?
What? I mean, hippos have never stung me, so I guess hippos.
They're only the most mortal. What is a mammal? No, are there mammals?
Hippos are mammals, sure.
Yeah.
The most mortal?
Yeah.
You mean like deadly?
Yeah.
Right, but
if you live
in Boston.
That is true. Okay, so what's your answer?
Hippos.
Okay. Red Hot Chili Peppers or Black Keys?
Oh, God.
You didn't see this coming?
I didn't expect this particular pairing, no. I was actually expecting... never mind. I'm not even going to say that. That's dangerous. I think I have to go with the Red Hot Chili Peppers by volume.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, not because of this, but I felt... No. Anyway, Beatles or Led Zeppelin?
Ah!
Gotcha!
So rude.
You're allowed to say both.
It's actually an interesting question, though.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you go to the desert island, and you're only allowed to bring music by one artist.
I'm sorry, the what island?
The desert island.
Oh, okay. Right. That's interesting because, well...
No, it's not open. Like, you're only allowed to bring, like, one of these artists.
Right. I think for that, I think I would have to go with the Beatles because of the diversity of their catalog. But
that makes sense.
My favorite Led Zeppelin songs, I think, are better than my favorite Beatles songs.
So...
Well, I guess I'll go with the Beatles, but it's... You can't go wrong. Mm.
Mushrooms or pickles?
You did say neither was an option, right?
I mean, I am curious, you know? Like, on the scale
of... Okay, so here's the thing. There's a lot of pickled stuff that's good. I just don't like pickles, as in, you know, pickled cucumbers.
Yeah.
So, I think I would go with pickles, because I haven't really run across a mushroom that I liked. Whereas, like, stuff that's pickle adjacent...
Okay, but if it's mushrooms or the pickled cucumber?
I don't know.
Okay.
Neither.
Okay. Fire Emblem or Smash?
Oh, jeez.
Hitting you hard?
Yes. Oh, man. There's been a long stretch of my life where that would have actually been a fairly easy choice for Smash. But I'm at the point where I'm not playing competitive Smash or even like non-competitive Smash all that often. I do play more Fire Emblem at this point in my life. So like if I'm looking forward, I might have to say Fire Emblem. I think... If in like absolute terms, if that makes sense, I would say Smash, just because I think like when you have like a good group to play with and you're playing Smash, that is more fun than playing Fire Emblem. But it gets harder to find that opportunity as you get older. So
is it because you can play Fire Emblem only? You can only
single
play that?
Player.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fire Emblem or Dominion?
Dominion actually. I mean. Fire Emblem is great, but man, Dominion is so varied in, like, yeah, I mean, everybody knows this, right? Nobody who's listening to this is unaware of why Dominion is great, but the variety that it brings to the table is just, it may be unparalleled in my gaming experience, at least in terms of being valuable. Like, it is legitimately, you know, different and interesting every time I play the game. Maybe not every game of Dominion is great, but the diversity of play is so impactful. It's not just sort of like a statistical thing. It's fantastic. I can more easily see myself getting bored eventually with the format of Fire Emblem than I can the format of Dominion.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, Dominion Online or IRL?
I guess I gotta go with online. Dominion IRL is not quite as fun to play, but it's more, you know, like it's a better social experience, of course. But that's another case where, like, kind of like the Smash thing, where it can be hard to, like, you know, actually have people to play with. And plus, the people that I would play with, you know, in person aren't members of the Discord, and like there's maybe a skill cap and. So in practice, you know, the vast majority of my Dominioning is online, and if I didn't have the online client, I would not play it very much, probably. So it's online client is very, very valuable.
Yeah, that's my experience as well. So tell me, how many unique opponents have you played in League?
Oh my God, a lot, because. You know, I'm not quite highly rated enough or ranked enough, whatever, in League, however you say that, tiered, to be able to play the same opponents over and over. I don't think I'm quite on the leaderboard for the unique opponents, but I might be kind of close. Like, some of the people who have been around as long as me but have been in like E are even more so. Like, they have more variety of opponents, but it's in the hundreds. I know that. I know I've looked at it too. I can't remember. I'm gonna guess it's like, let me see. I've been playing since season like 20 something.
20, maybe I should have asked that.
20, I want to say 27. It's like season like 56. I've been like 30-ish seasons. So like the upper bound. No. Is it 22? That was the other number I had in mind.
23.
Huh. The funny thing is, I think I look at this every season to post like an intro in my division channels. Like, I've been playing since this and modding since this, and I can never remember the number correctly. I have a very good memory, by the way. So
the best. You're an elephant.
So this is my 34th season?
Yes.
Damn. Okay. So at maximum, it would be 34 times 5, which is not as much as I would have thought, actually. But that means if it's in the hundreds, it's not 200.
No.
So let's say 120.
Very close. 123.
Wow!
1, 2, 3.
Incredible!
Yes.
Does that include season 56?
I don't know. I just look at the
standings.
Yeah.
Age, it probably doesn't then.
Okay. Well, now I think we are warm.
Okay. So was only one quiz question?
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
There's always only just one.
Oh.
You're so greedy. Okay. You look so happy. Finally.
Yes.
Long
have I waited for this day.
When and how did you start playing Dominion?
Yeah, so this is a story that I've told a number of times, so apologies for listeners who may have heard it before, but I started playing the summer of 2009. So I graduated college in 2008, was back home for a couple of years, and a friend of mine was going to grad school back home, and he got a copy of, I think, both Base and Intrigue. I know we were playing with Intrigue and Base, and that was over the summer. I remember us playing it maybe for the first time over 4th of July weekend. And then Seaside came out not long after that, and that was very exciting. There were orange cards, and I got to tell you, that was quite the revelation. I also specifically remember a game we played where we played with every attack card in the game. This was, I guess, it would have been before Seaside came out, because we didn't quite have enough attack cards to have 10 kingdom cards.
Mm.
Because I'm pretty sure we had Masquerade in there as well. So it was like, it was a power board. I mean, it was like Thief, Spy, Saboteur, Swindler,
Bandit.
Like Witch,
Bandit?
No. There was no Bandit back then. That's a 2E card.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What else was Militia? There's got to be other attacks and Intrigue, but Bureaucrat, maybe. I mean, that wouldn't have been relevant, but I'm sure it was there. And the final score was like 1 to -2 to -5 or something like that.
Wow.
It was very memorable. Anyway, so that was how I started playing. But I didn't get into the online thing. I guess that's probably one of the upcoming questions, so I should probably...
No, please.
Okay. Okay. I got into online Dominion much later. I ended up getting a bunch of the sets from a friend of mine. I think I had every set or almost every set up through Dark Ages. I think maybe I didn't have Hinterlands. And then I ended up teaching the game to Akuchi in like 2012 or so, 2012, 2013. He got very into it. He went on to the forum. He joined the league. He's been playing in the league a lot longer than I have. Maybe not a lot, but at this point, proportionally. But he played for quite a while before I joined and would talk to me about it and be like, oh, there's this cool, you know, Dominion stuff. You should check it out. And I was like, yeah, okay, you know, maybe. And then finally, maybe it was because we also started playing in person with him and then another friend of ours. And I think at that point, that was when I was like, okay, I should go check this out. And I pretty much joined the community to play League. Pretty much the other part of the story that I always want to tell, because I always want to take credit for this, is that I was very quickly annoyed with the whole having to send people messages on the forum in order to schedule matches. So I proposed somewhere on the Discord, it was like, hey, it would be cool if there was a way to schedule your matches through Discord. We should have division channels or something. And then that happened. And so you can either blame or credit me, depending on your opinion of division channels, for that feature of the league. That was long before I was like a mod or anything. But yeah, so then after joining the Discord community and, you know, playing League, it pretty much, you know, that's pretty much how it's been since then, I suppose. Playing online, playing on the Discord, playing tournaments, whatever. I didn't ever really play on any of the previous online clients. Pretty much only know this one. Like, I think I might have seen one of the previous clients, but I never really played on them.
So the Discord was there for people to just like generally talk about the game and kingdom analysis, blah blah blah, and you would still do the scheduling on the forums, and then you came up with the glorious idea to
there was move some
and that's why JSH doesn't like you.
Probably. There was some league stuff going on in the Discord. I don't think any of it was official, but there was, I think what was happening was there was maybe like some scheduling going on at like the A level or something like that, or maybe B, and I was in D, and I was like, hey, like, I don't really know like how to find my opponents on here, but if they are on here, it would sure be nice to be able to schedule with them. Like, could we have like a, you know, a channel for that? And there was definitely somebody who was like, well, D players aren't going to be on the Discord. There's no point in doing that.
So rude.
There's a, yeah. But yeah, obviously it worked out.
I think it's pretty good, actually. I mean, I've never used the forums. I know that they exist, but I never used them. And but I'm aware that they are like, this whole move to Discord was quite contentious, or is quite contentious with a subset of members of our community.
Yeah, it's still an active board to my knowledge, and I never like got involved in the board. I just wanted to play League.
What do you mean the board?
The forum.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I guess the one other part of this is doing commentary, which I started doing in like 2018, maybe even 2017. I don't remember exactly, but I've been doing it for like kind of a long time. And I think that was also basically inspired by Akuchi. He started doing it before I did. I was like, that seems cool. And the other thing that occurred to me at some point, and I don't remember whether this was before I started doing it or after, but was the idea that maybe I would play better if I was more explicit about my thought process, and having to speak my thought process out loud would help me do that. And I have found when I've done a handful of videos of ladder games the same way, and I found that like my ladder performance is much better if I'm recording, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. Like my league performance, I have no comparison at this point because I record all the matches, but the ladder thing was very noticeable. Like I was, you know, stuck at, I don't know, like around like, you know, level 58 or something like that, or whatever it was. And then I started recording them and my level like went up to like 61 or something. Mm. So it was like, Yeah, okay, that's definitive. So that's like the one other, I guess, change in my Dominion play since I joined the league.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you use video?
That's an interesting question. Well, I guess, you know, then I'd have to shower.
That's valid. Okay. Do you have a favorite card-shaped object? And if so, what is it?
Oh, man. I don't know. For a while, it was Stonemason until I realized that the reason it was Stonemason was because the very first time we played with Stonemason, when I say we, I mean me and Aku and this friend of ours, when we played in person, because he, I said, you know, I got the sets up through Dark Ages, then Aku got the newer sets. So he had, you know, like guilds and empires and adventures and all that stuff. Anyway, the very first board that I played with that was also had fairy. So I ferried the Stonemasons, and I was like, this is amazing. I can just buy two of anything I want, anytime I want. It's so good. And then over time, I realized that that's not actually how Stonemason works in general. I'm really bad at picking favorites. So I'm like halfway tempted to say, the Seize the Day art is cool. I'll go with that. But I don't actually know. Seize the Day is actually kind of a scary card to play with. Okay, how about Scrap? Scrap is, I think, not necessarily like my favorite card to play with exactly, but I do think it's a really well-designed card. It's really cool. Just the different uses that you can find with it for it are really cool. It presents you with a lot of options, a lot of choices, so it's a good card for presenting you with decisions, which I think is, you know, like the interesting thing to do in a game like Dominion, but it isn't the kind of card that is super, it's not polarizing, it's not like dominating a board, it's not making the board either like super fast or super slow or anything like that. It's just like a nice, like, you know, card that fits into a lot of different contexts. So I said some similar things about it when the set came out. I was like, this seems like a really well-designed card, and I stand by that take. Hunting Lodge, not the best card in that set, not in Menagerie. I don't stand by that take. But Scrap, the best design card, I stand by that one.
Okay, for all you out there who are like, well, back then you said Hunting Lodge is the best card. That was for them?
Yes, that's okay. Right. I'm sure there are at least zero people other than me who remember that I said that.
Okay, sound off. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, like, Scrap is, like, usually a non-brainer when it is on a board, but...
You mean a no-brainer? You always get it?
Yeah, I think. Not totally positive, but I do like the moments when you just like get to scrap like a very expensive card and you're like, gold, be gone, or province, be gone, or like a seven cost and you're like, yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I like the way that Scrap kind of feeds into itself with the flexibility of you gain the horse or the silver, and then you scrap the horse or the silver, and you do whichever. You're like, well, right now I want more draw. Well, right now I want buys, or, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's a no-brainer. You definitely gain it a lot, but I think, you know, if there's Chapel on the board, there's, you know, something that's either like a tempo trasher or, I don't know. Like, I mean, Chapel would be the example, or like Cathedral, or, you know, the kinds of trashers where it's like you very rarely skip them. Scrap is not that level, at least in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, Cathedral is scary.
It is so scary. It is scary, but it's so good.
Yeah.
But it is terrifying, yes.
It's definitely more scary than Seize the Day.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Although, they're scary in different ways, right?
Yeah.
Like, Cathedral is like, can I... Cathedral is like a skill test, kind of like, can I just like pilot my deck successfully? Seize the Day is like, can I hold in my mind potential that my opponent has in front of them?
Yeah. Seize the Day is more about like, can I remember that it is on the board?
Yeah, but not just remember that it's on the board. I mean, obviously that's the prerequisite, but remembering, okay, you know, they have this many gains, but what if they spend one of their buys on Seize the Day, and yeah. then they have, like, you know, two N minus one gains, except maybe also they can gain gains in between, so then I have to account for it. Yeah.
So do you not have a like list?
No.
Okay. Do you have a ban list?
Yes.
You want to share what's sure. on your ban list?
So possession, which is, you know, that's not exactly a novel concept to put possession on one's ban list.
But so avant-garde.
I have played a handful of possession games in spite of that, because, for example, I managed to get two of them in the Halloween tournament where I didn't have my ban list set up because I was playing on a different account.
Oh, the masked player.
Yeah. I was Gory Teller.
And you were pretty successful in that tournament.
I was. I came
You made
in,
it to finals,
like,
I think.
Semifinals. Or not for, or like third place match.
Oh.
And I lost. I made it to that match, and then I got absolutely walloped by Truffles.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
It was pretty gross. But Truffles is a pretty good player, though, so I don't feel too bad about that. Anyway. Yeah. So I didn't have possession on my ban list, and there was some match there where we ended up playing two out of four games with possession. Like, that was fine, but it's not something I want to deal with on anything like a regular basis, and I don't, like, miss having it. The other two I put on there because they induced rage in me, which is, or which are Knights and Swindler. I think I put Swindler on there first. There is a specific game that I played with Swindler where the only village on the board was Herald, and I won the Herald split 6-4, but also lost it 4-1, and then I banned Swindler.
I was like,
no, you're done. I'm so angry at you right now. And I do not miss it. Knights is a little bit different. I've played enough games with Knights where, like, it's fine that I don't necessarily... It doesn't feel as mandatory to ban to me as Swindler, but at the same time, I've also played enough games where it's just, like, tilting to have to, like, see the key cards in your deck just get blown up and there's not really anything you can do about it. But, yeah, the trashing attacks in general I don't like very much. I wouldn't be surprised if I eventually ban Barbarian. I actually just had a game literally earlier today where I was worried that I might lose because of Barbarian. Like, if it, like, it's like, oh, if it happens to flip my, like, province and turn it into a duchy. I think as it turned out, that was not going to be quite enough for my opponent to be able to win the game. But if I'd had, like, one or two fewer points, it would have been. And I don't know. Fortunately, I haven't run into a game where Barbarian just made me super angry, but I wouldn't be surprised if at some point it does.
Yeah. What did you think about this observation that Donald X made in, like, the advent calendar stuff about, I think it was about Knights, where he said for some reason, like, for some people it's, like, so much worse to have, like, a Knight attack, like a trashing attack, than, like, a witch attack, like, mm-hmm. cursing. Mm-hmm. And, like, I would add ruins to that, I guess, if you have mm-hmm. a board without trashing. I guess maybe the parameters are different, because it would be, like, specifically you have a witch or, like, a ruin attack and no trashing, where that's a pain, but the Knight attack, like, still, like, attacks your deck directly,
yes.
like, in another sense. What are your thoughts about that?
So it's two things. One part of it is like the feeling of control, or the lack of feeling of control. So if witch is on a board and there's no trashing, I know I'm going to get roughly five curses, and I can just accept that as that's going to happen.
Hmm.
If there's no, like, real doubt about that. Or, you know, if for whatever reason my opponent doesn't go for witch, then I get to destroy them. But, you know, usually they do. So it's symmetrical. I mean, it isn't always symmetrical, right? Sometimes you get unlucky with the shuffles and you lose the curse split 4-6 or 3-7 and you're sad. And, I mean, that can happen with all kinds of things in Dominion, of course. So it's not that it's entirely in your control, but there is a greater sense of control. Whereas the Knights, and I guess it, it's it's tied into the other point I was going to make, which is about variance. The variance in what the knights can do to you is much greater than the variance in what the witch can do to you. The witch can give you curses.
Yeah.
The end. It can give you some number of curses. The knights, like, maybe they flip two coppers every single time and they never do anything to you. Or maybe they flip, like, the best 3 to 6 cost card in your deck every time. And, you know, I mean, it's not that there's never mitigation for that. Sometimes there is. Sometimes you have, you know, attack immunity. Sometimes you have fortress. Sometimes your deck is just, like, junky enough that the knights don't really matter. But when it does matter, that variance can just be so infuriating. And it's not even... It's definitely a psychological thing, right? It's not that the knights are like an inherently worse attack or something that you can't actually play around or plan around. It's just, it feels so much worse because of the unpredictability of it. Whereas, like, I know every time they play a wish, I'm going to get a curse. So it doesn't feel that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's because they played... You know, it's a cultist board and they played 4 cultists with 5 ruins left. And now I'm like, oh, God,
yeah.
I lost the ruin split 8-2. Oh, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, that can, of course, can feel really bad or similar types of things. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I don't ban cultist anyway. It still doesn't make me as angry as the fact
that it All right, let's go back to the desert island. Yes, you are going to the desert island and you can only bring the base set and one other expansion. What's the expansion?
Oh, God. All right. It's okay. It's got to be one with landscapes. So that rules out intrigue, seaside, alchemy. None of the small expansions. So no guilds, no cornucopia, no hinterlands, no dark promos. Ages, no promos. Yeah. So basically you're talking about, like, from Adventures, Empires, Nocturne, Renaissance, Menagerie, Allies, and my Plunder. I think that's all the sets, like, once landscapes were introduced. Oh, I guess I didn't say it rules out Prosperity, but I guess it rules out Prosperity. I wouldn't pick Nocturne. I do not like the amount of variance from the boons and hexes in Nocturne.
Boo!
That's pretty far down my list of expansions. I mean, I don't have, like, a very, you know, if I were rating the expansions, I like most of the expansions. Dominion's a good game. I like it. It's not, there's not a lot of gradation there, but... But Nocturne would be down towards the bottom.
I'm gonna let this slide.
So I think I would say Empires over Adventures. So I can strike Adventures from the possible list. I don't think I would take Allies because I honestly think that the Allies, like the actual ally cards, are a bit of a bust. There's too many times when they just don't really gel that well.
Yeah, I feel they're very hit or miss.
Yeah.
But when they're good, they're really good. And when they're bad, they're just forgettable.
Yeah, but they're forgettable too often in my, or like marginal too often for my preference.
Yeah.
They do some cool stuff. I just wish that, I don't know, like that there was... I mean, not that other landscapes can't be ignorable as well, but maybe part of what brings it to the forefront of my mind is that I always have, like, the one favor. So I always have to, like, actively be thinking about, okay,
mm-hmm.
what am I doing with this? And then when it's not important, it's like, oh, I guess I'm just doing this once. Okay, well, that's kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, interesting. For me, it's always like, do I need the liaison, like, for my deck or not?
Right.
And then I'd be like, okay, what's the ally? Like, is the ally worth picking up the liaison or not?
Right. And it pretty often isn't worth picking up just for that. Mm. Like well more than 50% of the time,
yeah.
You wouldn't pick up a liaison just for the ally. Anyway, so yeah, so not allies, even though it does have also very excellent art in Guildmaster. really cool looking card.
Hmm.
So let's see. Plunder, I think probably not as well. It's a cool expansion, but I think I like the, you know, I think I prefer, say, projects to loot. So that would leave empires, allies, and menagerie.
Allies?
No, sorry. Empires, renaissance, and menagerie.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, that's a tough call. I might say, I don't know, playing with just base and menagerie would probably have too many games with exiling. So maybe we go with one of renaissance or empires. And I don't know, getting, would I rather have landmarks or projects? Probably projects. So I guess we'll say renaissance.
All right. That was very scientific.
Of course, the real answer is, like, I would just cry about only having one other expansion, because how can, I mean, the value, there's so much value lost there. You're losing, like, what? Like more than 80% of, yeah, well, more than 80%, not quite 90%, but you're losing so much Dominion. It's terribly sad.
So would you rather not take Dominion at all?
No. One more.
Okay.
I would probably prefer to take, like, maybe not with the small expansions, because the two small expansions added up equals like one large expansion, but I'd probably, you know, if I ranked like all of the large expansions from like favorite to least favorite, I'd probably take like my two least favorite large expansions over my favorite large expansion, because I would just rather just have more.
Okay. Noted. You, it's not easy for you to make decisions.
That, and but it's also just, I'd like, for me, the differentiation is particularly small with the expansions.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, not to me personally, because obviously Nocturne is the best expansion, but fine. Do you prefer League to other Dominion tournaments?
In a way, yes. But the way is mostly like that my Dominion playing kind of orbits around League, and everything else is like when I can fit it in around League, and so it feels more burdensome to schedule matches for not League.
Yeah.
Though the thing is, it's weird because like scheduling matches like feels like a burden, but then like playing the matches is great. I like playing the game, but having to like carve out this specific block of time with, you know, with whatever else I might be doing is like it's like the commitment that is the problem.
Yeah, that's interesting. It might be similar for me. Or like, obviously for me there's the like added anxiety of like actually having to play the match, but like once I start like playing the match, it's usually fun. Yeah.
I think what I would like maybe is to have some way to disconnect the part of my brain that is aware of the concept of rating, so that I could play ladder without having to like structure it. Like as I was talking earlier, I would play ladder better if I'm recording, but then like that's like kind of more of a like commitment as opposed to just like playing a game here or there. But if like I don't want to play unrated, because that's not going to be like, I want the competitive aspect of the experience, but I don't want to care about the numbers as much as I invariably do.
Yeah. No, I feel that. So what are your favorite non-League tournaments?
The mass player thing was such a cool concept. Like, ooh, I mean, more. Easy for me to say because I got to participate in it, but...
Oh, mask player. I thought mass player. What is this? Mask like crew battle?
Mask player. Mm-hmm. That was such a cool concept. Like, it was the way it was executed, like the thematicness of it and all of that was just so fun. I really, really liked that. I hope that comes back at some point.
How was it like playing that? Because you didn't know who you were playing, right?
Yeah.
How was it? Did you have like when you were playing certain people where you're like, oh, I bet this is Janelle's or this could be Zerik?
I had a lot of guesses, but I honestly don't remember how much of it was from me playing them versus specking other matches and reading stuff. Mm. Like, it, I'm going to say I'm not like the world's most observant person. So I don't think I would be very good in general, like relative to most people, at picking up on those kinds of things. Like as I was playing, I mean, yeah. I do remember like having something. There was some like a match that I played where my opponent resigned quickly a couple times, and I was like, maybe this is serious.
Yeah.
Like there's some things that are, you know, there's some tells or like I don't think I played J-Nails, but you know, if there've been like, you know, three crypt purchases, you're like, okay, but. You know, Dominion as a game, you know, your goal is not to play it to your style, right? Your goal is to play to whatever the board suggests you should be doing. I mean, you might have a style, but you're not, like, trying to play to it. It's not like, oh, let me, like, play this, you know, my way. It's like, let me do the thing that I think is good on this board. So I don't tend to, like, be very concerned with what other people's styles are because I'm just interested in, mm-hmm. you know, what's the best thing to do. And so I'm not like, that's kind of not how I'm thinking about things. So I'm mostly, when I'm aware of those things, it's because other people are talking about it. Not because I observe it myself and make note of it. So yeah.
mm-hmm. Okay. Well, sorry. I interrupted you.
No, that's favorite, fine. That's fine. Favorite Nordic I was trying tournaments. To think of some of the other cool tournaments. The World Cup is fun. The aspect of caring about your country, like as a country, is not important to me, but the aspect of caring about your team as a team, like the collection of individual players, that is really cool. It's just cool to like root for your team members and just like have that camaraderie going. We had a really cool USB, which I love that it's USB. Like, part of me wants to always be on USB so it can be USB rather than USA, even if I was good enough to place in the USA. But anyway, we had a really cool USB team the last World Cup. Minion Pawn did a really good job of captaining the ship, and it was a really fun experience. Another tournament that I really liked on similar lines was there was this tournament called Team Prep. So I was on a team with Mort and Cruz Keen, and the way that it worked was we got a whole bunch of different boards that had already been pre-rolled, and we got to practice playing those boards, and mm-hmm. then we went and played them against other teams, and we got to choose
2-player.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we got to choose. So for example, we get, you know, a set of 10 boards or something. I forget how many. And you know, I would against my opponent, I'd be like, okay, you know, game one, I go first and I choose board A. And then game two, they go first and they choose board C. And then game three, I go first and they choose board F. And then game four, you know, like, so, but then like those, if those boards were chosen, so if I as player one choose a board, then my teammates can't choose the same board as player one. I think that was how it worked. So you had to kind of like explore. Mm-hmm. all the different boards pretty much. But it was just fun to have that, again, that camaraderie aspect of like, we would get in voice chat and play through the boards and talk about them and like, think like, okay, well, you know, what should we open? You know, what is our strategy here? Like there was, it was just a different sort of thing. Very cool, I thought. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really like the tournament. I mean, I like the mixed tournaments in general as well. Like they tend to, I mean, some of them are better than others, but it tends to be like a cool way to really, like dig into certain mechanics. And so I pretty much played in all of the mixed tournaments that I could. So there's a lot of different good tournaments.
yeah. Do you have any players that you would like to play against that you haven't played yet?
Okay. So I have to say, like, I want to play Akuchi again. I played him once.
Aww.
And I got bopped, and I need my vengeance. I'm not sure that I would get it, but I need to try.
Did you get in the same VC?
No. I'm trying to remember. We talked about that. There is a funny story about that. That this is not really related, but
That's not okay.
Oh, all right.
No, please.
So there was one time I was playing against Catra in some tournament, and I was in voice chat, and I was saying something about, you know, I think, you know, my opponent should do this or whatever, and Catra typed into the game chat something that seemed like a response to what I was saying, and I was like, wait. And I looked in, and yeah, Catra was like in the voice chat with me, and like I have my speakers off when I am doing voice chat, which is why at other times there have been like issues where somebody will be like, you know, hey, you screwed up, you know, player order or whatever, and like I'm oblivious. Whatever. But this time, like it was one of the first tournaments they played in, and so it was like a totally innocent misunderstanding. They were like, oh, I guess this is a thing that people do. They get in voice chat and they talk. And what was funny to me was like, wait, why do you? Like, I'm not responding. Like, what? It's like, it must have been a very confusing conversation from their perspective. But yeah, so I have, like, I guess I'm, in general, though, I would be reluctant to do that sort of thing just because I'm so used to how I do my commentary. And yeah, it would be such a, like a different thing to have to try to like, okay, I'm going to talk about this, but I'm not going to say like what's in my hand, I guess, or I'm going to talk around what I actually want to do. I don't know. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. So sense. Back to your question, aside from Akuchi, I would generally just be interested in playing, you know, any of the top players. You know, I'd love to make it into B sometime. I came kind of close once, but that in general have not, you know, been able to reach such heights. Fortunately, from time to time, the luminaries of the uppermost tiers do fall down to C and D, and I get to play them. And, you know, that's fun. So, I mean, I have had, you know, matches in League against, like, Xerix, for example. Not just in Max Player. And that's how I ended up playing Aku as well, for example. But there are definitely still some people like in the upper reaches that I have never played against. Like I've never played, I don't think I've ever played against Mick. I did play one side tournament match against VR Smith and got destroyed as expected. I don't think I've ever played against J-Nails. I don't think I've ever played against Lemon Spawn, actually, or if I have, it was a long time ago.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I'd like to play against Wandering Winder, actually. He doesn't play in any of the tournaments, so that's not going to happen, but it'd be nice. But yeah, there's like pretty much anybody, you know, like who is going to like have the potential to like legitimately just destroy me. Like, I'd be interested to play to see how that goes and see if I can hold my own.
Do you have any memorable moments from all of your very long League career or in general Dominion career? What were the most memorable moments?
Well, making the top 16 of the DOC last year was definitely a memorable moment. I was not expecting to get that far, and I definitely needed some luck to do so, with apologies in particular to Haka 3, but you know, we take those. That was really cool. In general, I would say like a lot of the stuff that I've mentioned, it's not necessarily memorable from the perspective of like, oh, I did super well, but they were just, you know, like fun events. The World Cup thing, I guess, is a combination of both, because we got further than we were probably expected to, and I did have a couple of matches where I played against some strong players. You know, like we were like, you know, outmatched, right? Like, our, you know, we were the underdogs in every match, and we, there were some, you know, matches where we tied or won that we were really proud of.
Yeah.
I don't so much remember individual like moments or games that well. I like have to go back and revisit the videos or something to do that. But I mean, there's been so much to. I mean, I'm kind of just proud of my continued participation in League. So like I'm close to the leaderboard for things like consecutive seasons, and I guess I'm still on the leaderboard for highest win rate in E, though that was in a four player division. but yeah, there's some longevity stuff that I'm closing in on the Hall of Fame on the website, which is cool. Just because, I don't know, it's just cool to have like, you know, played for a long time and, you know, be able to see like how the league has like changed and improved and over time. And in a way, like, even though I've basically, you know, I've had a couple seasons in E, but I've basically spent my entire league career in the C and D tiers. But what that means has changed so much over time.
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm a much stronger player than I was when I joined the league. But then, like, so are all these other players that are in those tiers. So it's cool to have that we've all kind of collectively improved so much. And yeah, we're playing much higher level Dominion than we were.
When and why did you decide to become a moderator?
Yeah, so I think I was in the league for, like, 20 seasons or something before I joined the mod team. I don't know, it was a long time. But I've also been on mod for a long time at this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to say it was in the 40s. It was the season that I became a moderator. Basically, I guess there were two reasons. One reason was I found myself talking a lot in the league town halls, and I was like, maybe if I care this much about how the league operates, I should get involved more directly rather than just saying stuff in the town halls. And then the other reason is just, I participated in this thing for a long time, and it seems only right and proper that I should, you know, do something to like get back to it and help, you know, it continue to succeed. So yeah, I guess those were the main reasons. I think we've made a lot of good changes since I joined the mod team. And so I find myself, it's not that there's nothing I would change about the league given the opportunity or like given unilateral power or something, but we're a lot closer to, you know, where I want the league to be than we were at the time. So I think we've made a lot of good changes. So I do find myself like in the town halls or like, you know, when we're discussing potential rules changes, I'm for the most part, I'm like, you know, things are pretty good. Like, I'm pretty happy with where it is for the most part, except for Flex Division.
Yes. What do you like best about moderating, and what do you find most difficult?
So for sure, the most difficult thing is when there's people misbehaving, which does not happen very much.
Yeah.
It's really remarkable how friendly the atmosphere is in general in the league, but it does happen from time to time, and it's really difficult to determine like how to deal with people, you know, when you have two players that are butting heads and there's not necessarily like a clear right or wrong, or even just there is a clear right and wrong, but you know, you're not sure, like, do we really want to like kick this person out of the league, or do we want to just like, you know, give them a stern talking to, or do we, you know, do we like need to change like the rules to deal with some situation? Like, there's a lot of stuff, like the few times that sort of thing comes up, there's a lot of stuff that goes into those discussions where it can just be like very difficult to have like a clear definitive answer of like, this is how we deal with the situation. It does happen sometimes that it's clear, but a lot of times it's very much a judgment call, and it feels, you know, it feels not great to ever have to like do any kind of like disciplinary action. And on similar, along similar lines, like dropping players, just even just for,
yeah,
like dropping somebody who's like completely inactive, like, you know, they never responded to any messages or anything is whatever.
Mm.
But when somebody's falling behind, like it, like dealing with that, either dropping them or not dropping them is difficult, because mm-hmm. if you don't drop them, you can cause problems for the other players. If you do drop them, the other players might be sad because then they don't, that's one of their matches that they don't get to play. And then also like the player involved might be sad, and they might have like stuff going on, and they might be saying like, oh, you know, I just need like time, whatever. And then like, sometimes they say that and you're like, okay, fine, go ahead. And then like, they end up needing to play multiple matches like into the league break. Yeah. So just that sort of stuff is difficult to deal with. We're trying to come up with some stuff right now to help provide clearer guidelines to the moderators for how to deal with that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's difficult to do.
Yeah, that's also been my experience, like from just modding 1 year of the DOC, where, I don't know, I happen to have like one player who really, almost every single round, their respective opponents would be like, hey, I messaged them, they did not get back to me. And then I messaged them, they would not answer me. But then like in the end, they would always get their match played. So it's like, well, it left a very like bad taste in my mouth. And I was very outspoken about like, can we please install, like have some rules about communication, and
right.
so that like this does not happen again. But yeah, I feel like there are a couple of situations, or like just because it came up in the town hall, like undo policies, for example, where I feel like it's very hard to come up with definitive rules about this.
Yes.
Especially when it's like, undo policy is more like, I feel like it's more reliant on an honor system than on like, because like for most matches, it's not that a moderator is always around, right? When you're playing a match, mm-hmm. and then it can be like really difficult for anyone to make a call. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know where like I fall on that, but I feel like it's sometimes you just have to let things go, even though it's frustrating, because there's not really a way to implement a sensible rule about that.
Yeah, undo stuff is one of the cases where it can get really tricky. Fortunately, most people seem to manage to navigate things fine. Or if they don't, I guess they're not telling us. But it seems like it's fine. But yeah, there definitely have been cases where somebody denies an undo and the other person gets really upset, and then you get like, you know, they're saying stuff back and forth through each other that they probably shouldn't be saying, and it is difficult, especially because, as you say, you can't really legislate your way out of it because it's so complicated. I remember just in that discussion in the recent town hall, somebody said something, you know, to the effect of, well, maybe we could have a rule that says like you're required to do a no info undo of one step. And then they said, you know, well, I guess it would except for like this one, I forget what the circumstance was, here's some exception to that wouldn't work. And I was thinking, well, there's also probably 37 other exceptions that you haven't thought of. And so this is why it's super complicated. I mean, most games don't have this kind of functionality. I think partially for this reason is because you don't want to have to try to figure out what's valid and what's not. You just say, screw it, you know, misclick, deal with it. I'm glad that Dominion has the option. I prefer that it has it versus not having it, but it does introduce a lot of potential for headaches.
Yeah.
Fortunately, yeah, like I said, the incidence rate is pretty low. I get the impression from the discussions in the Etiquette Channel that on Ladder, it's more frequent that you get antagonistic stuff around undos. But in the League, I think the fact that people, there's some level of knowing who the other person is, like more so than on Ladder, where you already had to talk to them to like schedule your match, for example. So I think that generates a little bit more of an atmosphere of respect.
Yeah, I agree.
I didn't answer your question about what I liked about modding.
Okay.
So probably the most rewarding thing about modding, it's very rare, but is I have had a couple of times people reach out to me and say like, hey, thank you for like thanking me personally for something that I did. And that is like amazing. Like, and I'm not saying that anybody needs to be doing this, because like I don't know that I'm personally necessarily doing anything in particular to merit it. Like, generally speaking, the person who does stuff that merits that is A. Libby, and everybody should thank him for all the work that he does. But
yes, please, everyone, send love to A. Libby.
Yes, but when it has come up, I've been like, oh. But aside from that, I enjoy like the just sort of thinking about the structure of the league and how it should work and what makes sense and what doesn't make sense and why. That's one of the reasons that I wanted to be the rules chair, is because it's not like my, you know, I'm responsible for deciding what the rules are. I'm just responsible for making sure that the rules reflect what the team as a whole has decided. But it necessarily means I'm involved in those conversations, and that's, you know, I like those conversations. I in general just like enjoy, you know, interacting with the mod team. It's, you know, it's a cool group of people, and the there's, I don't know, it's cool like what we're able to come together and accomplish as a team. However small my part in it might be. And then just like being able to help people with like requests that they have is rewarding. Like, it doesn't come up that often that like I'm necessarily being like singled out as like, you know, hey, can you personally help me with this thing? It does come up though. But then there's, you know, in addition to that, there's like stuff in like Ask the League Mods or in League or whatever, where it's like a general, like, hey, League Mods, you know, can you help me with this? And even though like sometimes, you know, non-mods can answer those questions. So, you know, it's not necessarily like, oh, only the League Mods can answer those questions. But we do have access to a lot of information that enables us to help people with stuff like that, or you know, literal access to, you know, the sheet system or whatever. So, you know, being able to help people out with that kind of stuff is rewarding. So I guess those would be the things.
So as the rules chair,
yes,
you can write a rule saying pandas always win.
No.
What?
I mean, or rather, I probably could, but I'm pretty sure CR Lundy would see it and say, I don't think this is a rule that we have voted for.
What about sheepdogs, if you included sheepdogs?
Well, that we could explore that.
Okay.
Not Too Bad usually reviews the rules as well, so I might
have to bribe Not Too Bad too.
Yeah, right. You might have to, and there might be some other people as well. Actually, the new mods that we've recently gotten have been very involved, so like I doubt you'd be able to slip that past Salt Rosa or the man. So it's just gonna get harder and harder, I think.
Okay, fine. It's not like I'm playing League at the moment, but I had another question, and I'll try to explain it as best as I can. But sometimes I wonder, on the surface level, I would say like it's very clear to most of the people who are active on Discord that the mod team is like, that's voluntary work, and most of you like play as well, and mm-hmm. you're just like this, you're doing this for everyone to have like a good experience, and you're not doing this for, I don't know, some sense of power or whatever.
Phenomenal cosmic power.
Exactly. And then the thing is, what is the other, like, very small living space, or what is
the living space? Yeah. Yes.
I only know that in German, obviously. Winzig kleiner Lebensraum. But sometimes I feel like it happens automatically that us them mentality kind of, not that it's like very entrenched, but I feel like it comes up naturally Do you ever feel like that is a thing? Because sometimes, like in very certain and very specific circumstances, which is usually town hall, I feel like that is, that sometimes shines through where you're like, some people write stuff where you're like, well, the mods are, but it's not like you are like this group of people who get to make the decisions and who like decide how the game is to be played or a league is to be played. To my mind, you're like just like the organizers of a very big tournament, which obviously means that you are the ones who decide like critical moments or situations, but you don't dictate how the game is to be played.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. So I guess I have a couple of thoughts on this. First of all, one way in which I might sympathize with the perspective of players who are presenting their opinion in the way that you're talking about is that in a sense we can dictate. Like the rules of League enable the moderators to change the rules based on our own decisions, independent of like what the players say. We do not do this as a practical matter, but there isn't a codified mechanism for the players to like have a referendum on the moderators or to like vote on something and have that override the moderators. Obviously, the whole point of what we're doing is in service to the experience of the players. So there's no point in us like being like, aha, like you wanted this, but we are going to do this other totally different thing instead. The only extent to which we are interested in not doing just like what the players want is the extent to which we think that either we are not able to accurately capture what the players want. So for example, if there's a town hall vote, but we feel like it doesn't reflect like the player base correctly because the participants are like skewed, the participation is skewed in some way, like, you know, oh, there's mostly higher tier players or whatever. That would be one way. Or the other way would be if we feel like there is some aspect of the way things work that the players don't like understand or aren't like able to take into account or something. Like, so, you know, if the players were to be like, we want, you know, this thing, I mean, like a simple kind of silly example would be, you know, the players say like, this thing should work this way. And we're like, we cannot implement this in Google Sheets or whatever. Like, okay, that would, you know, then we can't do what you want. But there's more, you know, there's stuff that's not that like straightforward to evaluate, but where, you know, the players like, so for, I guess an example would be stuff related to like the benchmarks and like dropping players and scheduling. Like we have to like with our rules potentially like lean a little bit more stickler than like what the players ask for, because it is sort of inherent in like the players are not going to want us to like kick them out or to tell them you have to get this done by this time. I mean, they might want that enforced on other players, but I'm not even saying that like the players are necessarily like, you know, incapable of like correctly saying like this is how it should be, but we have to like consider that possibility, I guess, is more what I'm saying. And that's just an example. Yeah, so I can understand how it might feel to some players like, well, the mods are just like doing what they want, because we do technically have the latitude to do that. But, you know, yeah, like it isn't what we're setting out to do. The other thing is that the moderators, because as you said, a lot of the moderators are players, and we like understand the player perspective. Most of the moderators who aren't players have been players. Well, I guess probably all of them have been players in the past.
Yeah.
At some point, there was a rule about that. I don't know if there still is. You would think I would know because I'm the rules chair, but I don't. I have to look that up. But at least it used to be a rule that you had to have played in order to be a moderator.
I think that's still the case.
It might be. But in any case, the point is we can, like, just because we're players doesn't mean we understand like what the players want in aggregate or what any individual player wants, but we at least like have some understanding as individuals of the perspective of players. And I mean, speaking personally, like, I very much will participate in town halls and say things that are from my perspective as a player, as well as my perspective as a moderator. You know, like, I as a player would want this, I as a player would want that. And that's, like, about what, you know, like, the Flex Divisions thing is a good example of this. Like, as a moderator, the Flex, I don't really, like, the Flex Divisions aren't doing me any harm, right? Like, I don't, my objection to that isn't about, like, having my moderator hat on. It's, like, I just, as a player, I don't want to have Flex Division. Mm. So that's, an example of where, you know, we are part of that group as well. So I think, yes, I can understand why people sometimes see it as kind of, if not us versus them, at least us and them. But I do think that is, like, as you say, maybe a bit unfair to us, though I wouldn't say it bothers me too much in general. Mm-hmm. Because, like, partially because I understand it, and partially just because I'm able to, like, I don't know, I can handle it. Like, it's not the case that anybody's saying, you know, you personally have ruined the league for me. Like, they're saying, you know, they might be saying, I disagree with this, or, like, the moderators are not doing a good job of that. And maybe they're right, right? Like, maybe we aren't doing a good job of something, and we should improve with that. So,
yeah,
you know, it's fine. Like, I mean, I want people to be, you know, polite and considerate, but I don't mind, you know, critical feedback for the moderation team. So It is a volunteer position, but I don't think, I don't want to use that as a catch-all defense to say, like, well, anything we do is fine because we're just volunteers, so you can't expect anything from us. Like, I don't think that's, you know, correct.
Yeah, I understand that. On the other hand, I feel like sometimes when there's a town hall about, like, a specific thing, and you're like, well, from your perspective, like, as a moderator, this would make your life easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, this might be a slight inconvenience for me, but, like, since you're saying it would make your life easier, then I'm like, by all means, please, like, let's do it that way, because I feel like it's more important to have you as the moderators, like, have an easy job with, like, managing this mega tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. The moderator team is big enough that for the stuff that all of the moderators do, like moderating divisions, I'm not concerned about moderators, like, burning out on that. But when it comes to stuff like the bot stuff that Cave does, or the admin stuff that A Libby does, or the sheets stuff that, and there's a couple different people that do that, like CR Lundy, A Libby, I guess are the primary people doing that. Like the website stuff that Tracer does, onboarding stuff that Nisala does, like all of these kinds of things are, like, big responsibilities. Rules chair is not that bad, so. but those other things are, like, a lot of work, and I think that's where I really think that what you're talking about comes into play. Like, if we lose too many of those people and we don't have people to pick up the slack, then the league could just, like, kind of crumble around us. And so stuff that makes it easier to do onboarding, you know, and makes it more tenable for someone to continue to run onboarding, for as an example, is probably worth doing, even if that means, you know, our onboarding success rate is, like, a little bit worse, or the onboarding experience is a little bit worse. Like, obviously there's a trade-off there, and at some point, if it's awful, you wouldn't want to do it. But yeah, I think that's a good point.
Okay. do you have any more thoughts to share on Dominion? Because if not, we're going to move on to the most important part of the interview.
Do I have more thoughts on Dominion? I mean, of course I do, but I think for the purposes of this interview, we have covered that which requires covering.
Okay, maybe I do have more questions, though.
Oh, go for it.
When did you start doing the, what are they called, like, preview videos?
Oh, yeah. So Aku, she reached out to me about doing the one for Menagerie, the one where I said that Scrap was well-designed and Hunting Lodge was the best company.
Okay, so not that long.
I think that was like, I think I had already done, you know what? No, I had already done preview videos for that one. And then he reached out to me to do like a sort of like a different sort of first impressions video. Cause I was just going through the individual cards and then he was like, oh, hey, you know, would you want to do this thing? So actually, I guess it wasn't that was the impetus. So what was the impetus? I'm not entirely sure. It might have just been that was the first set that came out. Because when did Menagerie come out? Was that the one that came out that like early 2020, like right around the pandemic starting?
How would I know?
I think it was, and I guess that might have been the so. Before Menagerie was Renaissance, which came out like a couple years before it, I want to say. Like I don't think anything came out in 2019, and Renaissance was 2018. So the difference might have been that like as of 2018, I was just starting with like the various YouTube stuff that I do. Like and by 2020 I had like a much better idea of like the kind of stuff that I wanted to do with it. And so it might have just been, you know, now I have this channel and I have dozens of viewers. and this seems like a cool thing that I could do, like go through all the cards. Like I'm excited about the expansion and it's the pandemic, which means now suddenly I'm working from home all the time, which means I can just do this like, you know, whenever. And it's not like I have to go to work like, you know, right now. And therefore I can't record this video. I can just like start work, you know, 30 minutes or an hour later or whatever. So yeah, I think that was basically the reason. It was just like, I'm sure other people had done it, right? I'm sure I was stealing the format from Wandering Winder or RTT or somebody.
So apart from Hunting Lodge, do you remember any other like hot takes where now you're like, now that you've played a bunch with the card, you're like, oh, this was definitely not the correct impression.
Yeah. I mean, so to be fair, I still think Hunting Lodge is a good card. It's not nearly the best card in the set. I think part of the reason I picked it was because I don't think I was looking at Menagerie as like there being any one super standout card, which in retrospect was incorrect, but it was partially a reaction. So by the time we recorded that video, like I'd seen other people's first impressions and stuff. Like when I record the like daily preview first impressions or whatever, I'm not like, I haven't seen anything anybody else has to say about anything. Like that's just like my immediate reactions. But the Hunting Lodge thing was after people had already really been talking up Livery. And I was like, I don't think this card is quite so good as everybody thinks. So that take aged fine. On the other hand, like Cavalry, I mean, a lot of people got that one wrong, but I definitely would have to include myself in the number of like, I was like, you know, Villa's really good, but like, you don't get the action back. How is this? It's just not going to work. Yeah, that was wrong. that was wrong. I mean, I don't think I thought it was a bad card, but I don't think I thought it was like a terribly good card. I'm trying to remember what else. Like, I've probably only played like one or two games with Frigate. So I don't know how good that is, but when I reviewed that in the Plunder reviews, I was like, wow, this card seems completely bonkers. And now I haven't heard people really talking about it that way, but maybe I just haven't played with it enough to know whether that impression was wrong. In general, it's really hard for me to just remember random individual assessments I gave of cards a lot. Because a lot of time my impression is, you know, like what I'll say is like, this seems pretty good. It seems all right. You know, it's not like I give it, I'm like, oh, 8 out of 10. Like,
yeah.
And a lot of times what I'm talking about isn't necessarily like how good the card is, abstractly speaking, but like, this is when I would, you know, want the card. This is what it's going to do. This is a card that it's similar to, you know, this is what I think about the design. So, I don't think I have like a great answer to that question of like, oh, here's some specific take that I had that was terrible. I'd probably remember better if I participated in Thunder Dominion, but I can't participate in Thunder Dominion because they do it wrong.
Okay, well, I don't know what Thunder Dominion is, but please share your opinions.
So Thunder Dominion is this it's like Thunder, like supposed to be like Thunderdome, where they have all the cards in an individual set. Generally, is the format get ranked by various selection methods. Like sometimes they like do, you know, compare pairs of cards, and then sometimes it's like a vote up, vote down system or an insertion. So I don't know. There's a bunch of different ways that it's been done. And I did participate in it at one point a while ago, but at some point it was decided that all of the split piles should be evaluated as one card. So like they rate clashes rather than rating battle plan and archer and warlord and territory.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not okay. Like territory is not as good of a card as warlord. It is clearly a much worse card than warlord, and I need to be able to rate them separately.
Why?
Because they have different ratings. Like territory is not one of the best cards in allies, but warlord is one of the best cards in allies. And if I say clashes is one of the best cards in allies, then that is implicitly saying the territory is one of the best cards in allies, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to know, like, if I want to know, like, you know, why is it useful to know how good a card is? Because it gives you a heuristic with which to determine like when, like what to gain and when. It's not necessarily the best heuristic, but it is a heuristic. So like, for example, if we say like, you know, Recruiter is a 10 out of 10 card, amazing, then you are more likely to go, okay, well, I don't really know if I need Recruiter on this board, but gee, it sure is a really good card, so maybe I should just get it anyway because it's, you know, it's really good and I probably want it, like on that basis. But then how does that work with territory? Clashes is, you know, the best pile in allies. Okay, but what does that mean for specifically battle plan? What does that mean for specifically archer? What does that mean for world? What does that mean for territory? Like, it doesn't really tell you what you want to know.
I don't understand. Like, I don't follow. It's not like you cannot get warlord without battle plan, and that entails territory. But like, getting warlord does not mean that you get a territory automatically.
No.
Right? So I don't really see.
But you can get a warlord without getting battle plan. It's unlikely, but you can do it. Like, if the other player gets a battle plan and they rotate to warlord, you can get a warlord without getting a battle plan. But more generally, if I'm trying to think about, like, should I get an archer, the relevant rating that I want to have in my mind is not, like, this sort of, like, amalgamated rating of how good battle plan, archer, warlord, and territory are. It's how good archer is, right? And it's true that I can't open with archer, but so, like,
I would say that's pretty significant.
What is?
That it is one pile and that you cannot open archer.
Well, it's relevant for sure. Like, you want to, archer is worse because it is not on top of the pile. Would archer be a better card than militia if it was its own pile? You know, is archer a better card than militia as it stands? Like, you know, those are legitimate questions to ask. In the same way, like, that Fortune is a much worse card because it has Gladiator sitting on top of it. But it would be weird to me to say that, like, Gladiator and Fortune are, like, the same thing, or that they necessarily get the same rating. Like, I think Fortune is a better card than Gladiator, and so if Battle Plan is on the board, and so is Gladiator and Fortune, I can rotate the Gladiators out of the way and ignore them, and then I can get Fortune, which is the good card. So, like, that's... And you still want to account in your rating of Fortune for the fact that it's not on top, but that doesn't mean that I want to say that it's the same value as Gladiator, because it's, like, very not.
Hmm. Okay. I'm not convinced, but it's fine. The goal of this interview is not to convince me that your take on Thunder Dominion is the best take or the correct take.
So what would you rate? Would you want to rate those cards as one, or those piles as one rating?
Yeah.
Why?
Because, yeah, it makes sense to me to have, like, everything that is a kingdom pile to have that rated as a whole and not to break it up, because, like, what does it mean to me if one card that I have to flip, like, three other cards for is the card that I want or not want, right? If it means I have to go through, like, that pile to get it. I don't see why, like, what use is it to me to have, like, separate ratings?
Because you're, every time you're considering gaining one of those cards, you're considering not gaining that card. You're not considering gaining, like, an abstract clash card from the clash pile. You're deciding whether you want to gain a battle plan or whether you want to gain an archer or whatever. It's like when you, in the same way that if you're gaining a smithy, you're not gaining, like, a generic draw card. So, like, you want to know, like, how good is smithy in particular. And it matters how good draw is, but it also matters how good smithy in particular is. Well, in the same way, like, you want to know how good the specific thing that you're gaining is, not just, like, how good the average of those four things is, or two things in the case of Gladiator, Fortune, or whatever.
Like, I don't know what it is. Like, how would you go about travelers in that sense? Like, it's not like the travelers, like the starting travelers, are why you get the travelers, right?
No.
You want to go, like, through to stage four. How many stages are four?
Right.
Three or four.
The difference is that you do actually have to get a peasant in order to get a disciple. So, like, the goodness of disciple is more directly influencing the goodness of peasant. Though, to be clear, like, part of the reason battle plan is good is because it gives you access to warlord. But, you know, you can take those things into account. You can say, like, okay, peasant gives me access to this card, which gives me access to this card, which gives me access to this card, and then I have a disciple, and that's amazing. Like, you can take that into account in rating the card. Rating the other travelers, I think you can also do it. It's not as useful as rating kingdom piles, because, like, the only time you're really making that decision is, like, do I want to upgrade this or not?
What? So, wait, but you're arguing to, like, rate the single cards in the split piles, but you're arguing against rating the single travelers?
No, I mean, I would rate all of them. It's just not, it's not as useful, because you don't have, like, if archer is available, then it's available and you can buy it. Mm. But you can't buy soldier or fugitive. So, like, the rating is less relevant, because it's, like, it only matters in terms of doing the exchange thing. So you have to specifically, like, the conditions are narrower, but it's still useful to have the ratings. And, like, so, for example, soldier is a card that you stop on sometimes, because you can have soldier payload games where the attack is, like, you get a bunch of money because you played a bunch of attacks, and you want to take that into account when you're rating soldiers. So, yes, absolutely, I would rate soldiers separately. Peasant gets more of soldier baked into it than battle plan does get warlord baked into it, because you have to get a peasant, whereas you don't have to get a battle plan. But battle plan is still, like, pretty close to mandatory to get a warlord. But, like, archer definitely isn't mandatory to get warlord, right? Like, I do not ever need to gain an archer in order to gain a warlord.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe that's not strictly true, because I might, like, there's one archer left in the pile and I can gain it with a workshop and then gain a warlord or something. So I guess that's not, like, that's pretty marginal. Whereas soldier, you have to go through soldier to get to disciple every time. So, like, again, like, soldier gets, like, more credit for that than archer. But anyway.
Yeah, it still does not really make sense to me, but it's fine. It doesn't have to. Also, like, imagine participating in, like, Thunder Dominion. Also don't know what Thunderdome is, but it's fine. Like,
Thunderdome is not really, it's not really that similar.
Okay, well, I don't need to know. It's not really that relevant to me in my life, generally,
okay.
I would say. Okay, any more thoughts on Dominion?
Not specifically.
Okay. Then we need to talk about the music brackets.
Yes. Okay.
When and how did you get involved with playing the music brackets?
Yeah. So I got involved during technically the second music brackets. The first bracket was an all years bracket. So just, like, submit any song you want. And JSH ran that. And I didn't participate in that, didn't know what was going on, was not in the music channel at all. Then they started to do the yearly brackets, and running of that got handed off to Donald X and Bluey and Volfeed. I don't know, maybe not all at once, but whatever. And they ran 1989 as the first yearly bracket, where they just, like, randomly chose a year. And I
honestly do not remember where JSH posted to, like, hey, come vote on this. Maybe it was in the Smash channel. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, where JSH and I are both, like, participating other than in music. I have no idea why he would have said to do that in the Smash channel, but there was some... I know it was JSH that, like, posted something somewhere, and it wouldn't have been in general because I don't read general. So it was somewhere, and I ended up, yeah, going and checking that out. And so I didn't get to submit songs for that first yearly bracket, but I've submitted them for every single one of them since. And that was in, like, 2020, like, maybe all of 2020 or so, than when that 1989 bracket ran. So it has been 2.5 years of music brackets.
Yeah, yeah, a long, long time. A long time. How many brackets did you win so far?
So I just won 2 recently. Before that, I want to say I'd won maybe 3 or 4. So the 2006 bracket, I won with Wildcat by Ratatat, and then the 2013 one with Riptide by Vance Joy. That was the recent one. I think my first win ever was Is You Is or Is You Ain't My Baby by Louis Jordan, which was like the either 40 to 44 or 45 to 49. I'm not actually sure which one. I also won whichever one MGMT's big album was in. The Electric Feel is the song. It's like something in the 2010s, I think. And I won, to the consternation of almost everyone at this point, I submitted one of the 4 winning Pink Floyd songs, Learning to Fly, which is like 87. And everyone is like, why did Pink Floyd win in 87? I'm like, I don't know. You all voted for it.
I was going to say, like, this, it's so funny to me where, like, it's very clear. The player pool is very, very small. Like, mm-hmm. You can't, although, I mean, you tend to do that too sometimes, but it tends to be, like, very obvious, like, who, like why certain songs win. Because people vote for them.
I mean, it's a good song. I don't regret submitting it. I was surprised that it won. But yeah. I think that might be it. I guess it also depends on whether you count dupes. So, for example, there was a bracket where I duped The Distance by Cake, and that won. And I also had the runner-up song with One Headlight of the Wallflowers. But I don't tend to count that, like, sort of thing, because, like, that wasn't, like, my song. I didn't own it. So I think that's it in terms of outright victories.
I'm just thinking that 2.5 years of, like, non-stop and constant music bracket seems so stressful to me.
It's been a lot. I've definitely gotten to a point where it's, like, it feels like a grind. I wish it would slow down.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
That's why I never clicked the checkout button.
Yeah, if you could change anything about the structure of the main brackets, what would that be?
A couple things. I'd make it so that more of the participants submitted music in, like, the 60s and 70s so we could get to 128 songs.
Aww.
It's so sad when we have these 96-song brackets in really good years, but or even 64-song brackets. But, yeah, that's not actually the structure. No, I mean, I would slow down the pace of the thing. I would probably maybe just make it, like, maybe double the amount of time between, like, the last match getting posted and the round end or something like that. So go from, like, 28 or 24 to 48 hours or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just remove the checkout thing entirely and just say it is always 24 or 48 hours. We hardly ever hit the checkout threshold anyway. I don't know if that's because other people are doing what I'm doing and saying, like, this is moving too fast, so let's, like, you know, put the brakes on as much as possible, or whether it's just because people don't remember to click it, or because people just don't finish, or I don't know what the reason is, but that it, regardless, like, we hardly ever hit it anyway, so it might as well just be a consistent 24, except for the round one, which is 36. But yeah, that would be the main thing.
I think it's been roughly a year now that I am participating in the brackets, and I definitely did not, like, I took a couple of breaks, mostly because I was not interested in the years specifically. Mm-hmm. But also just because it's a lot.
Yep.
It's just like the tempo is just too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, like then it's like, okay, this year I don't think like this is interesting to me. So like, why would I stress myself out about like listening to 96 songs, of which I might actually like actively like four. So yeah. What have been your favorite brackets?
That is really hard to answer because I don't tend to come away with a great like holistic sense of the bracket independent of like the overall like era. So I could just say, oh, I like the 60s brackets because I like the music from the 60s. But I go into those knowing that I'm going to like the average song in them more than I will in, you know, other brackets. So then I have to consider relative to my expectations. So for example, we just did the 73 bracket, and that one I would say came in below expectation for me. Like other brackets in the 70s have been better. So that would be an example of the kind of like evaluation. And so my favorite brackets would be the ones that are like beat like my expectations the most, but it's really hard to say what that is. Like I have to go back and re-listen to them. Some of the early brackets that we did, I would say, because I was like the whole project was fresh for me, stand out more just as being memorable or having like individual songs that I like latched onto more as like, ooh, this song is really cool and new to me. And I guess that's the other aspect of this, is that even though like I might like the music in the 60s the most, like it won't necessarily be the bracket that has the most like good songs that are new to me, because I'll know a lot of the songs already. So I appreciate having the good songs that I know in the brackets, like for sure. As other people get to hear them and I get to vote for them and hopefully see them win, whatever. But the for me personally, the biggest value is out of getting the new songs that I like. And
even though you're never going to like go back and listen to them again,
that's
ever.
Not true.
But the brackets will continue until we die.
Until the heat death of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't actually expect that to happen. I anticipate, I mean, maybe Downblacks will keep running those like side brackets until the heat death of the universe. But I anticipate specifically with respect to the main brackets that once we have gone through all the years, we may do like a rerun that is like of some nature, but we won't keep doing it. I feel confident about that. And even if we did, at some point I would be like, okay, I have nothing to contribute to this. So at some point I would be out on that. But yeah, no, I will go back. Like there are specific artists that I can point to as like, I've liked a bunch of the songs that are new to me in these brackets, so I want to go check them out. Like the two that immediately jumped to mind for me are that like came up in some of the earlier-ish brackets are Wolfpack and They Might Be Giants. I already knew about They Might Be Giants. I knew some of their songs, but there's a whole lot of catalog that I didn't know. And they've had some really cool songs in there. Wolfpack, I had no idea of their existence, but they've had some really cool songs. But those are not the only two. It's just like ones that popped to mind. So I definitely intend to go like check those out. It's just I don't have the mental capacity to do that while we're still doing this whole project.
No. Yeah, I guess. I mean, like there for a number of reasons, I do enjoy like everything post 1998 much more than before that. Obviously, like I wasn't around when this tournament was thought out, because like it is weird to me. Like the starting point is weird to me, and like some of the like, I don't know, rules about it are like not clear. I like the post 1998 songs best for like nostalgic reasons, but also because I feel like it's much more women artists, women singers typically than in anything that came before. Or at least like the brackets that I'm listening to. I don't know about like, I don't remember a lot of the 1973 songs, but the gender ratio was bad. And that's, I think, like very representative for a lot of the early years, which is always, I don't know, just boring at some point.
It's not a linear thing though. So like is part of like a nadir time, I think. So like in the early 60s, a nadir, like a valley.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the early 60s, you get like the Motown and girl group acts. And I mean, it's not that women weren't making music all through this time, but in terms of like what people are submitting.
Yeah, so exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, you get like very popular songs that, you know, made by women, or at least sung by women, and probably the writing credits might not be so gender equal, but at least in terms of the performance. And then when like in the wake of like the British invasion and then the introduction of like psychedelica and hard rock, that's when it kind of like drops off, and it doesn't like kind of pick back up until you get into like the disco era, which 73 is like a little early for. So I think, yeah, like 73 in particular is like not a great era for it, for gender balance. Like there was probably a better gender balance in our brackets for like the 40s, for example.
Mm. Well, I'll have to get back and listen to it, I guess.
Yeah,
maybe for a side project.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's like you said, there are like a couple of limiting factors, right? One being maybe those artists weren't as prominent, like mainstream. Mm-hmm. Another like very big limiting factor is the pool of players. Mm-hmm. Obviously.
Yeah. So. But I think there's for whatever reason, there's like genre trends too that like are tied to this, right? Like like I mentioned hard rock, like that as a genre just did not have nearly as much female representation as like the pop music that had preceded it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that's probably still true.
Probably.
Yeah. Well, the music brackets are definitely a source of joy and frustration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you like the main brackets better than the side tournaments?
Probably on average, yes. Like less. Well, okay. Do you mean in terms of running them, or like how they work, or in terms of the quality of the music? Both.
Quality of music.
Okay, that's harder to say. Probably the average quality is better in the side brackets, I would guess, because the way that people are selecting songs is more open-ended, and they're more able to just, you know, kind of select the absolute best thing. But I do prefer the structure of the main brackets. The most fun brackets overall might have been side brackets, though. Like the short songs bracket in particular was really, really fun, where like everything had to be a minute 30 or less. I guess I think there's more stuff, like the proportion of stuff that I just don't like really care about in the main brackets has been higher.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there have probably been more songs that I've been really enthusiastic about in the main brackets as well. Mm-hmm. But I think the average is probably better in the side brackets.
Mm. Any more thoughts on the music brackets?
Oh, man. Well, probably, but I think perhaps I should save them for another time.
Okay.
Hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, well, we are approaching the two-hour mark, but I did want to ask you about Fire Emblem, because that's, like, your YouTube channel basically is, what would you say the proportion is? Is it like half-half, or is it more Fire Emblem than Dominion? I would say it's more Fire Emblem than Dominion.
Probably a little bit more, because the upload schedule is more regular. Like, if you think about League, that's approximately a match per week during the season, and then less outside of it, and then you add in side tournaments, and maybe it gets back up towards like one per week, but the Fire Emblem videos, it's like two per week, so there's probably more Fire Emblem, yeah.
Hmm. Well, what is Fire Emblem, and when and why did you start playing?
Fire Emblem is a tactical role-playing game made by Intelligence Systems for Nintendo. Okay, I'm gonna. I was like trying to see how long I could sound like a Wikipedia article.
You need a year.
Well,
a date.
So the first Fire Emblem, they just had the 25th anniversary. No, that can't be right. The 30th anniversary. A little while ago. So the first one probably came out in like 1992, I would guess, for the NES. But they're all on Nintendo systems. They're tactical role-playing games. So you have a bunch of people moving around on a grid, fighting each other, medieval combat, turn-based stuff. It has been not so charitably described, in my opinion, as anime chess.
That's so funny.
So I started playing it in college. As with many people in the West, as opposed to Japan, my first Fire Emblem game was, of course, Super Smash Bros. Melee. which featured Marth and Roy, despite the fact that no Fire Emblem game had been released outside of Japan to that point. Then they released a version of it for the GameCube, the same system that Melee was on, and I picked that up kind of on a whim. I think I may have at least had some notion that it was similar to Advance Wars, which is another tactics game that's made by the same company, though it's like modern combat, and it has fairly different mechanics and different kind of storytelling and stuff like that. But it wasn't really like a very informed decision, I don't think. It was just like, oh, this looks kind of cool, you know, back when you would actually like go to physical stores to buy things. So you could like look at the box and be like, oh, this looks neat. That's the same reason I ended up buying Europa Universalis when I was in high school, which was another one of those like cool spontaneous purchases that led to lots of playing a game for a long time. Anyway, I played Path of Radiance for the GameCube, which is the 9th game in the franchise, and really liked that. And then there was a version for the Wii called Radiant Dawn that I liked even more. And then ended up going back and playing the ones that were on the Game Boy Advance, which was the 7th and 8th installments in the franchise. And then they had versions for the 3DS, and I played those. And then I went back and played some other stuff on emulators. And then there have been more games that have come out since, and played all of them. And I guess I just like the core mechanics just appealed to me a lot. That's basically what it comes down to. And then at some point I discovered that, you know, people would do like challenge runs of the Fire Emblem games. And I don't really do those the same way that a lot of the people in the community for doing that stuff do it, but I still like kind of do it. It's kind of hard to explain if you're not like involved in that community, but mm-hmm. like there's this LTC, low turn count community, where the goal is to like beat the game in as few turns as possible. Mm-hmm. And I've done stuff like that, except that like where a lot of the people involved in that community will like plan out how they're going to play the whole game and do like a lot of very detailed like analysis. I would just kind of like sit down and do it, like not mm-hmm. really as like a this is going to be perfect, but like this is going to be it'll be pretty good. I guess like that getting interested in that was like a factor for me, and I related to why I ended up putting it on to YouTube. Although not everything that I've done with Fire Emblem on YouTube is of that nature. Like some of it is just like me playing through the games the first time. There's a couple of games that are like really, really hard that I played for the first time on like the hardest difficulty and just like had the game like kick my ass over and over and over.
So you're not playing against other people.
No. It's all single player. It's all single player. There are a few games in the franchise that have like limited multiplayer stuff, but it's not really the purpose of the games. It's single player stuff.
So there's also challenges. Okay.
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of like playing a puzzle game.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt your flow. I was just...
I think I covered stuff.
So would you say, do you have any like insight on, because you have like just this one channel, right? Where you have like both these games that are like pretty different, I would say. Like, do you have any insights on like how many of your followers are like, or what of the, like which videos get the higher clicks? Like I saw that like some, I would say like in general, your previews videos get the the most clicks and like really a lot.
Hundreds.
The high hundreds, yeah. Do you have any insights in like, do you think people watch like both of them, or is it like very clearly
I assume
those are the Fire Emblem people and this is the Dominion audience?
I assume that it's almost no overlap. But
yeah.
I don't actually know. I've also put, like, there's other stuff I put on there, mostly like Smash stuff. So like, I don't really care about optimizing for like, you know, user engagement or whatever. Like, I'm just doing stuff I want to do and then putting it up there, and people can watch it or they can not watch it, whatever. Like, and in fact, with my Fire Emblem videos, the stuff that I make is not the stuff that like I would watch. Like, there's other people who do, like, you know, I'll play like a map and it'll take me like, you know, 25 minutes or 2 hours, like depending on like the kind of game it is. And there's other people who'd be like 5 minutes.
Ooh.
Like, because they have they've done all this like careful planning and stuff, whereas I'm like kind of just like playing it.
Yeah.
And the ones that I like watching are those. Like, I'm like, oh, this is cool. Like, they, you know, they have this exact like thing mapped out, but like it's too much effort for me to like do that myself. So I don't. But some people like the longer form stuff, and so like, I mean, I don't never watch the longer form stuff, but I like, my preference is to the like the super focused stuff. So I assume there's no overlap in the audience. I do have like a handful of people who leave comments on like either one or the other, not both, but like the, so like I know that there is like, there are more than zero people who are actively in like watching and thinking about each type of video, but it's a very small number of people who leave comments. So I don't like, there's, you know, I don't even know if the YouTube analytics would tell me if there's overlap or not, but I don't look at them because I don't care.
Yeah. Okay. Have you ever made Fire Emblem parody songs?
No, not like, I wrote at least part of one at one point, but I never made it into a thing. I never finished it, and I never like even got to the point of considering recording it. I would be willing to do so in theory, but that tends not to be where my mind goes. Probably because I'm more engaged with the Dominion community. I mean, I do participate in like the Fire Emblem like LTC Discord, and but I'm not anywhere near as active there as I am in the Dominion one.
That's hardly surprising. I feel like you're very active on the Dominion Discord.
Like, how would you have time?
Yes.
Well, I don't.
So having like this, it sounds like the set structure and schedule for the Fire Emblem uploads and games, since you started recording your Fire Emblem games or challenges or whatever, has that changed how you look at it? Like, if is it still like enjoyable and like a pastime, like a hobby, a game that you enjoy playing, or is it more like in the back of your mind you're like, well, I have to do this now, even if like maybe you're not like in the mood right now, but you're like, I have like to upload twice a week?
yeah that's a good question. So I definitely still enjoy playing the games. There are times when I like it's difficult to convince myself to sit down and play one of them, but it's not really usually because I like per se don't want to play the game like in a vacuum. It's usually because like some of the times, like, I mean, you know, I talked about the idea of challenge runs, but like
one of the things that I've done, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but is like just like take a game that I don't really know that well and play it on like the hardest difficulty and just like basically like, you know, it's like, you know, intentionally making it so that I'm like, it's difficult for me to beat. And sometimes that can get like to the point of being kind of overwhelming where I'm like, oh man, I really just don't know how to deal with this chapter. Like, what am I going to do? Like, ooh, like, so that's more of like, it's like intimidating than like, I don't like want to play it because I just am not like having fun with it. And usually once I sit down and do it, like I'm having fun with it anyway.
Mm.
But I do have like, for, especially for those, sometimes I have to have like a larger block of time available. So that can be like a bit of a thing if it's like, I'm tired or something, like, do I have the energy to do this? But no, I mean, I still have fun with the games for sure. I would say that the big thing that's changed is it has lessened my patience for like this stuff that isn't core to the experience. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a little tricky to talk about if you don't know anything about the games, but in the more recent games, they have introduced a lot of stuff that you can do outside of like the actual combat mechanics. So they'll, you know, you have like a base where you can like cook meals and buy accessories and gather resources and stuff like that. And a lot of that stuff, like when I was playing the games, you know, like, I don't know, 5+ years ago, just like for myself, I didn't focus on the fact that that stuff was like kind of uninteresting. And like, there was some like amount of there was potentially some amount of like grindiness to it. And like, you know, you're kind of wasting your time doing stuff that you don't like really need to do. You could just, you know, it's like, oh, do you really need to optimize like these stat bonuses, or can you just like go ahead and play the chapter? It's fine, whatever.
Mm.
And recording that has made me more cognizant of the way in which it feels like I'm potentially wasting the time of the person watching the video doing that stuff. And I get like, you know, I get impatient with it in a way that I like. So the newest game, for example, like you'll run around in the base and they'll have these little like sparkly things that where you, it's like, oh, I picked up like some grapes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like by myself, I don't necessarily mind running around to do that. But like when I'm recording, I'm like, man, this is such a, like, this cannot be interesting to watch. Like it's just very, like there's not really anything interesting going on. And so I'll, you know, either like, you know, say like, man, you know, gee, this is, I'm sure this is very interesting. Or I'll start like cutting it out entirely and stuff like that, depending on, you know, the, I don't know, like how I feel about it, I guess. But the point is that like, that's it. I think this is a good thing because it is like, I think it's good to be cognizant of where a game is essentially like wasting your time and is like, you're doing something that is not like the fun part of the experience.
Yeah.
And learning to be like, it's okay to skip over this thing and just, you know, go straight to the meat of the game. So I still, when I'm playing one of the new games for the first time, I will still like do like all the stuff the first time I play through just to like understand what the complete experience is. But then like when I go back and play it, it's like, okay, we're skipping the story. We're, you know, we're not doing this like side thing or that side thing. We're just like going into the map and playing the map. And that's it. So, and then it still takes me like 3 hours sometimes on the harder games.
Wow.
But sometimes it's really hard.
Okay. Any more thoughts that you like to share about Fire Emblem?
Fire Emblem is fun. And people should play it. It's definitely like, it definitely has its problems. But the good thing about it is that you can pretty much skip all the bad stuff in most of the games. Like, so long as the core gameplay of like moving the people around on the grid and having them fight is fun, then you can, you know, like, if the story sucks, you can skip it. If the stuff in the base sucks, you can skip it. It's fine. You just like go play the maps. And for sort of people who like that sort of thing, I would definitely recommend it. And I would also recommend
skipping the bad stuff if you think it's bad.
Okay. Well, I think I'm going to ask you some of the listener questions now.
Okay.
Alatar 224 wants to know, what's your favorite birthday song? I don't know that one. Can you please sing it for me? And I have to say it like that because it's like one question.
Right.
It's not so, like two individual notes.
Right. Yes. So the thing about that is that it's a lie because Alatar definitely does know the songs that I would pick as answers to this question.
I would not say that that's a lie. I would say it's more like, please tell everyone about your favorite birthday song.
Well, I mean, the two songs that I sing for birthdays aside from the standard Happy Birthday are Birthday by the Beatles and Happy Birthday by Weird Al, which music bracket denizens will be aware I are, you know, a musical acts that I have some fondness for. And so, okay, so I'm supposed to sing one of them. I mean, okay, I think as a song, the Beatles one is better.
Uh-huh.
But as a birthday song, the Weird Al one is more fun.
Okay.
So we can do the Weird Al song.
Go.
Okay. Well, it's time to celebrate your birthday. It happens every year. We eat a lot of broccoli and drink a lot of beer. You should be good and happy that you've got something to eat. A million people every day are starving in the street. Your father's in the gutter with the wretched and the poor. Your mother's in the kitchen with a can of Cycle 4. There's garbage in the water. There's poison in the sky. I guess it won't be long before we're all gonna die. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Well, what's the matter, little friend? You say this party is the pits. Enjoy it while it lasts. We'll soon be blown to bits. The monkeys in the Pentagon are gonna cook our goose. Their fingers on the button. All they need is an excuse. It doesn't take a military genius to see. We'll all be crispy critters after World War III. There's nowhere you can run to. There's nowhere you can hide. When they drop the big one, we all get fried. Come on, boys and girls, sing along with me now, okay? Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Guitar solo. Well, there's a punk in the alley and he's looking for a fight. There's an Arab on the corner buying everything in sight. There's a mother in the ghetto with another mouth to feed. Seems that everywhere you look today, there's misery and greed. I guess you know the earth is gonna crash into the sun, but that's no reason why we shouldn't have a little fun. So if it's more than you can handle, if it's more than you can take, then blow out the candles and have a piece of cake. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. And then there's an outro. And then he says, and a pinch to grow an inch. Which I know is probably a reference that's lost on our overseas listeners.
Like me.
But it is a thing that people say sometimes to kids for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Well, or not even just, yeah, overseas. I guess people who don't use imperial measurements, which is almost everyone.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I think we should air this episode on Alatar's birthday. When is that?
That is a good question.
Uh-oh. Okay, I will inquire. I'm going to
refrain from saying something that is wrong.
That we'll way find
I
out.
Be on record as not knowing.
We'll find out. But yeah, I feel like it's only right and proper to have him hear that on his birthday.
That's fair.
Mm. And then Jekyll wanted to know if Strumpf was submitting questions for somebody else to ask you, what would she want you to be asked but wouldn't ask herself? Which is a very mind-melding question.
Yes, yes it is. So I guess when you sent this to me, I misunderstood it and thought it was more in the sense of like, what would you be afraid to ask? But like, and so then my answer to that was going to be like, well, since this is a safe for work family friendly podcast, I don't think I can tell you what would be
But if you were sending the question to somebody else to ask me, then that would mean that you would be okay with them asking me the question as opposed to just me being like having to answer the questions, which is different. But I don't think you would send those questions to somebody else either. So that also means that I am woefully underprepared to answer this question.
I think like the move would have been to just send you a question, like just use this, right? And send you a question, and it would be, and then Jekyll wanted to know who your favorite moderator is.
Or whatever the question would be. Yeah. I don't think you would have had any fear or like any reluctance to ask me that question.
Well, then I am woefully underprepared because I'm pretty sure I could come up with like inconvenient questions for you to answer.
No, I don't doubt you could. I just don't think that that would be a question you'd be unwilling to ask me. The answer is obviously myself, by the way.
All right.
isn't that the diplomatic answer, really?
No.
Well, because that way I'm not picking favorites. No, the diplomatic answer is
you like everyone the same. But, they're everyone. Like, wow. Everyone is so nice. You can't pick yourself as your favorite moderator. Very self-centered.
Saying everyone, though, like, that's such a cop-out answer.
Yeah.
I mean, so is saying myself, admittedly, but it's... But it distracted
you. It's the better cop-out.
It distracted you from it being a cop-out.
No.
Anyway.
Okay.
All right. I'm gonna make an attempt to try to answer this ridiculous question.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
I guess, like, probably the question would be, how much do you like Strumpf? On a scale from yes to... Yes.
Extremely yes.
Because that's definitely not something that I would ask. Right?
Oh, about 11, sir.
Okay, what's your proposal?
I suspect that you would be. Well, you probably wouldn't ask the question, but yeah, maybe that does work. God, I don't have any good ideas for this. What you would be willing to have somebody else ask me but wouldn't ask yourself. See, I think that might actually be the empty set.
What does that mean?
Like, there are no questions that meet these parameters. I think anything you'd be willing to have somebody else ask me, you'd be willing to ask me yourself. You do not... You are not fearful. you are bold and brave. As an interviewer, I don't think you would have reluctance around that.
Anyways, we can move on. Unless you can come up with... Oh, no, you just said I'm very brave. Okay, let's dwell on that for a second.
On your bravery?
I'm so brave. Okay.
A moment of silence.
A moment of appreciation. Going back to our favorite Discord community... What are your three favorite Discord channels on the Dominion main server? Slash the channels that you always check first.
Right.
When you wake up.
That is not the right way to for me personally to approach that question because I just have to click on everything to make the highlighting go away.
So do you go top to bottom or bottom
to
top?
Not necessarily, but it's more like... I do check some things before other things, but it's a complex process. It has to do with like my expectations of what's going to be there. So for example, music votes, if I have time to listen to matches, I will go to that straight away. But if I don't have time to listen to that, I will avoid clicking on it because I don't want to have to like mark as unread or whatever. I might even mute the channel for like a little bit if it's like, oh, I need to like not have this telling me that I have unread stuff until I'm ready to listen to music. So it's all very complicated. But in any case, so, I mean, you already know about the music stuff. I suppose you also know about Smash, but I have to call out the Smash channel for being a very fun place. It's like where we talk about, you know, Melee tournaments and Melee mechanics and Melee top players and other stuff too, but those are very
Okay, wait, you say the music channel, but those are four channels. Do you mean like just the music?
I say you know about the music thing. So it's not news to you that like the music that I'm involved in the music stuff. It's also probably not news to you that I'm involved in the Smash channel, but the Smash channel is one of the ones that I would pick.
Okay. Okay, so that's one.
Right. I need to look at the channel list. And
you're such a cheater.
How is that cheating?
It's not. Wait, what? Wir sind keine Ärzte? What?
Do you want me to explain that?
Of course.
Okay, so when this is that's the mod bunk for Saul Rosa and I. Do you know about mod bunks? Did A. Libby tell you about that when you interviewed him?
No.
Okay, so every season mods pair up, or in some cases there's a triple, but to have bunk assignments for division moderation. And the way that it works is you get there's bots that like, or webhooks that post messages in the bunk that are like directed at the mods who are in that bunk. So that channel will contain the updates on like the status of meeting like the benchmarks and things like that for me and Saul Rosa in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a thing that the mods do to rename the bunk channels, to change like the avatar and the name of the like the webhook bot that posts the messages and that sort of thing. When we first at the bunk, we were trying, or I guess it was mostly Salt Rosa was trying to combine our usernames into something that was anything, and was struggling with that because our names don't really combine very well.
Rosa?
It was supposed to have all the letters, I think. But in any case, it ended up having the our arts. I forget whether it was ARTZ or ARZT or what exactly, but one of A. Libby or C.R. Lundy or maybe both said something in there about like they were like, oh, you should change it to you know arts because of Lost, and I was like, yeah, but we're not doctors. And so then I named the channel Wir sind keine Ärzte.
Mm-hmm. Because of Lost?
I don't know the reference.
Okay.
I have not seen Lost. But now we are not doctors.
Okay.
And the channel description as in which medical school has not been attended.
Oh, yeah. That seems very correct.
And then we have... we have Dr. Tran as our avatar, which is this Dr. Tran. He's a real doctor, but he's actually just 5 years old.
Oh.
So he's also not a doctor.
Okay.
I'm sure this all makes sense and will definitely go into the podcast. Anyway.
I'm not known for editing out silliness.
Okay, well... I'll be interested to know if literally any listeners have any idea what I'm talking about with Dr. Tran. It's like a kind of meme thing from like 2005 or something.
Okay, so sound off.
Anyway,
yes.
Other Smash. Good channels. Yeah, I mean, I think the music channel has got to be one of the picks. It's just like, you know, too good. And then I'm kind of torn... between language and like maybe the thing about the League Mod channels is there's no like one League Mod channel that stands out as like this is the cool channel. It's like there's stuff going on in a whole bunch of different channels, so maybe I'll just go with language. Language is fun.
Cool. I realized that we have not talked about the advent calendar at all. Which, I mean, you did share some of the history, and I did share some of the history in that channel.
Mm-hmm.
at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's fine. Would you want to be part of a future advent calendar?
Natürlich.
Cool. I mean, I would obviously ask you anyway. I might have this on tape now.
Ganz bestimmt und auf jeden Fall.
Okay, great. So now there's no way out for you.
That's right.
That's good.
That project was so fun.
It was
so fun.
Yeah, it was really good. It was fun for me. I mean, it was pretty stressful for me, but that's mostly on me, I guess. Because I need to, learn how to be a better project manager, I guess. But it was definitely, I'm very proud of us.
Yes.
It was so good. Okay. Okay, so last question. Who would you be interested in hearing an interview with on the pod in the future?
Yeah, so prior to the advent calendar, I probably would have said Donald X, but you kind of interviewed him a lot. Granted, you didn't interview him in this format, but I still feel like,
yeah,
it's got to be. You've already, didn't you say that Steph agreed to an interview?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's that checked off. It'd be interesting to hear JSH talk about the history of the Discord and stuff like that. So that would be a good one. What else? I mean, I'd love to have, some of my, some of the people that are either my IRL friends or that I've met, have the interview just because it'd be fun to hear them talk. So Akuchi or Alatar or some of the people that I've met at the New York City tournament. So Not Too Bad or Munster or Truffles or, there's a whole bunch of people, Lemon Spawn, we go down the roster. I'd pretty much, with Saviri, anybody who's gone to one of those would be particularly fun. Markison, keep throwing out names. but yeah, it's when you somebody personally, adds a little bit of extra.
Yeah.
Fun to it.
Yeah, it's definitely the most fun part about the podcasting, I would say, for me, is that I get to get to know people
mm-hmm.
on a personal level. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I understand this, wanting to know more from people that you actually know already. Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, it's just fun to hear them squirm about some of the hard questions and stuff like that.
Yes. All right. Do you have anything else that you want to share with your beloved community?
Everyone is awesome.
Aww, that's certainly true.
It really is a uniquely special community from my experience.
Yes.
Which I have been involved in some other internet communities, probably none so much as this one, for that reason, among others, but yeah, it's a very special place. I'm very glad that I was pulled into it, that Akuchi basically kept prodding me about it until I eventually got involved, because it has been a very rewarding experience and a very big part of my life for the past several years at this point. So yeah,
thank you, Aku.
Yes, thank you, Aku. And thank you to the community as a whole for being awesome, and to the people like Steph and Assemble Me and Sammy and A Libby and everybody else who has run the Dominion League, obviously to Donald X for making the game. everybody who's just done all the cool stuff that has gone on in the community. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking the time.
You're welcome.
And goodbye.
Tschüss.
Well, I guess we'll live with a pronunciation mystery forever. Thanks so much to Sharor for taking the time and being so cute. Thank you to Elitar224 and Jekyll for sending in questions. Thanks all of you for tuning in. Find both of us on Discord for feedback. Check out Fire Emblem and the music brackets. Send love to Olivia1152 and all the medical mods. And see you next time. The game has ended. Bye!